session number 9875, reel 14.
Mr. Ashurst, reel 14. You were telling me how you came to leave the desert, the Sinai Desert, and you were on your way to Marseille and the Western Front. I believe there was a story of an incident that happened while you were en route. Would you like to tell me
that? Yes, there was. You see, when we left Sinai, our company, they sent us four camels to clear off our stuff, tents, etc. Four camels, three to load up, and one camel, the boss, is just to be ridden, you see. So I got the job of seeing to the loading up business and clearing off with two of the old kooks, me and two of the old kooks. The lads had already marched off towards the rail head, the battalion, you know. And of course, we get the four camels there, and the old cooks have seen these camels and used them before, really, in India, you know. They're more up to date with these things than me. Anyhow, we got them down, three of them that we were loading, and loaded them up. And we got everything on the backs. It was marvellous. I never thought they could carry such stuff. But they carry a huge load, you know. Anyway, we've got them loaded, and we're ready to move off. Of course, we can't speak to these natives, and they can't speak to us. We don't know a word of their language. They don't know a word of ours. So we've got to do everything by signals or signs, you know. So I said to the fellow when we got them loaded up and they were laid there, I said, "All right, we're ready, come on, let's be going." So he got the camels up, you know, he told the men to get the camels up, and we started off. Well, it was heavy going. The sand was, it's proper loose sand. You sink about 3 inches every step, you know, it's that sort of sand. It's a damned hard work, weather like this. And with full pack, of course, and rifles we had, you know, the two cooks and me. And the two cooks, they were old enough to be my father, they were two old men, getting around about 48 to 50. Anyway, we trotted on slowly behind these camels. And the fella that was their boss was in front, leading in front with his one camel. He was walking it, you know, just leading it along. And we all set off, and after going so far, of course we got a sweat on and we were a bit tired, I suggested a rest. "Oh, stop here a bit," I said. So I motioned to him, "Whoa, whoa, you know, get the camels down a bit." So he understood that and he stopped. We got them down and we sat down on the sand close by, the two cooks and I. So I thought, well, I'll have a smoke now, a chance, you know, sat down. So I just put my rifle to the side on me here and got my cigarettes out and got a cigarette out and lit it. And just taking a nice pull, you know, and I'm putting my cigarette packet back with my cigarette in my lips or something like that, when all of a sudden, like lightning, the cigarette's gone. This fellow jumped up, this leader, he jumped up, grabs it, and run off like hell, head, you know. Oh, I think he went almost 100 yards, running as fast as he could. Then he turned around and started dancing and jigging, you know, and smoking my cigarette like this. So we sat there and looked at him. One of the cooks said, "You're not standing for that, are you, Corporal?" "I'm not," I said. "I'll shift that fella So I went down and I got my rifle. And of course I knew it was a good shot, you know. And I levelled it. And I pulled the trigger. And I must have skimmed his head. Because I fired it as near his head as I durst without hitting his head. I don't hit him, of course. Anyway, before the bullet had passed him, he was coming back to me like lightning. Running. These other three, the loading chaps with the cameras, they sat laughing. They were just enjoying it. Anyway, he came running very fast and begging of me not to shoot anymore. He flopped down full length in front of me, threw the cigarette on the sand, you know, where it burned away. And one of the crooks said, "We'll have a bit of fun here, Corporal." So he drew his bayonet, you know, fixed it on his rifle, and he put it against his chest. His first chest as he's lying on the floor, as if he was going to thrust it through him. Anyway, he didn't, of course. And after a moment, like, he was terrified. He said, "Come on, get up. Get these camels going." Well, he jumped up, you know, and he got the camels up. And before we started off, they were all on their feet, ready for moving, all three of us. He came running to me, you know, and he's motioning like this to his camel. He can't say nothing. He's just saying something, but I don't know what the hell it is. And he's at it like this. And one of the old crew says, "Hey, he's inviting you to ride on that bloody camel." He said, "I've never known anything like that before," the old crew said. The angels, them camels, you know, the proper private. And so come on, he comes nearer, you know. He went and he got his camel down. Come on. So one of the crew says, "Go on, get on," he said. "He's giving you a ride. Get on and ride it. Better than trudging through this bloody lot, you know." So I went to approach this camel, and it was sat down, of course, on its belly. We know they're hard to get on, even then, camels, they're big, you know. And full pack on my back and my rifle. Anyway, they shoved me up, and on his saddle, and he got the camel up, and I said, "Go on, you can have that cigarette, was still burning there, son. Go on, can have that." So he went and grabbed it and come marching on, and we swung along beautifully then. And we'd gone another hour or so travelling when I thought, "I'll have a smoke again, you know, up here." So I pulled my cigarettes out and I lit two. And he was walking up front, and I said, "Hey!" And he looked up, and I threw him the cigarette lit down, you know. Ooh, he was thinking and doing. So we went on beautiful at that, till we got to our camp, to the rear lead. And our sergeant major was there. He see me coming up, so he come. "How long have you been in the camel for?" he says to me. Well, I didn't need to say nothing. One of the old cooks started to tell him straight off that I was very highly honoured. No, but the sergeant major said, "You ride in the bloody camel, and you, these two old men, old enough to be your father, trotting it at the side." So one of the old cooks spoke up and told him then that I was highly honoured. And when he got the story, he shut up the sergeant major, and this fellow, he kept holding a ticket out to him. It was a ticket for food, I think, you know, food for him, for the four of them. He gave him the ticket and off he went, and Darren and I got off the camel, and that was the end of that little episode. That was my first ride on the camel. The first ride I'd ever had on a camel, that was. The first time I'd had anything to do with one, anyway.
So where did you go from there?
We were at the railhead then. Packed all our stuff onto the little trucks, you know, and away it went. And we, of course, we walked, marched back to the Suez Canal, and back across Suez again. The same camp, the same place, the same camp. We were back again then. And of course it was the usual life, into Suez and out, and passing the time on. By the way, you know, while we were there, I never mentioned it, but while we were there, we had professors came, you know, to tell us where we were and what the history of the land was, you know, and all that sort of thing. Interesting chats, you know, for the soldiers. These professors came and told us these things. It was very interesting. Sat there out in the sun, you know. Oh, yeah.
Was it voluntary?
I don't know whether they were voluntary or paid by the government, but anyway, they were there.
No, I mean, did you have to go to the lectures?
Oh, no, they were voluntary. Oh, no, they were all voluntary.
Did many go?
You could please... Yes, plenty. Well, you really couldn't go to town till later on, and you'd nothing to do, so you might as well sit and listen, because, well, they were there in the middle of your camp. Anyway, it was very interesting what the old fellows used to tell us.
Did you get to see any of the tourist spots?
The what?
Did you go and see any of the things they were talking about?
No, we just saw Suez.
Now, you didn't stay at Suez long this time, did you?
Not very long before we got orders to pack up once again. And this time, we marched down to Tewfik. That's the port for Suez, sort of thing, you know. Suez was the town, and Tewfik was the port on the sea. Is it the Red Sea, or whatever sea it is there? So we march down, and there's a boat waiting, and we go straight on the boat.
Did you know where you were going?
No, we don't know where we were going. We've no idea. And we march onto the boat, and we're wondering. We didn't even know we were going to sail down the canal. We thought we might have been going the other way, you know, out to sea. Anyway, we all got settled down, and eventually she left. About 5 o'clock in the evening, she left, tea time, and she turned her nose for the canal, you know, and into the canal we went. And the sailors told us, you'll come out at the other end in 12 hours. It's 12 hours sail through here, and you'll be out tomorrow morning about 5 a.m. And they were correct, you know, we did. It's about 8 miles an hour, the speed, I believe, and it's about 98 miles long. Anyway, they were quite right. But most of the night, you know, going through that canal, really, we getting on at 5 p.m. and setting sail down the canal. We spent most of it in bed, you see, all through the night. We spent hours and hours in bed. We didn't see any sign, any of the banks or anything like that. The canal simply sailed along, nice and comfortable. And we didn't see a great deal. I do remember seeing the place broaden out where there was a dredger or two, you know. You could see one or two dredgers on a broad piece, like a broader bit. They were shifting the sand, I believe, when it kept moving the sand. Anyway, we arrive at Port Said, and she stops when we come out of the canal. She stops at Port Said, and there it is. And officers and NCOs were allowed a couple of hours to go offshore. No men, just officers and NCOs. So I went ashore, went with about three other fellows, prepared a chap about them, stuck us out, you know, to the shore, Egyptian in his boat, and we had a walk around Port Said, and I changed a few coins, you know, for Egyptian coins, because they're very pretty Egyptian coins, you know, they're lovely coins. And I changed a few to try and get a full set. Well, I nearly did get a full set. Anyway, I changed a few what I wanted, and we were only sure about an hour, you know, altogether. That was all we had. And we came back again. And while we were there, they decided the boat wants calling up. They must have done. Because we stand there and the coal boats start coming just like canal barges. They are, you know, full to top of coal with two or three natives standing on, you know, coming.
How did they go about coaling the ship?
Well, it come right alongside and they put planks up. You know, ordinary planks, about this width and long planks. They put them to the bunkers. And the little boat was here loaded with coal. Well, two or three fellows was filling baskets with coal, giving them to another fellow, and he was whipping up the plank with them and emptying them in the bunker. Then he was running down again with the empty basket, you know. That's the game they played for some time, and put some coal in there anyway.
Did the coal dust get everywhere?
Oh, yes, for the time being, oh, yes. But they kept laughing at us, these workmen, you know, and doing all sorts of daft tricks in front of us. Anyway.
What sort of thing?
Well, he come running down shouting something. Come running down the plank, mind you, on the bare feet. And he jump off the plank onto the coal. And he's no shoes on or anything. And the foreman would be there, and when they did that, he'd carry on and play, and he'd go after them and give them a thump, knock them in water, but they'd be able to get in a crack, you know. I'd give them a punch, knock them in the water, and they'd come up smiling and start off again. They seemed proper childish, you know, didn't they? They were proper childish, they were anyway.
How long did they take?
Oh, an hour or two. They were at that job.
And who cleaned up the coal dust? The sailors?
Yes, afterwards. Oh, yes, they swilled off. They swilled off as we were going, really. You know, as soon as we got the coal, we started to go. And, well, they were at it then, busy, you know. We was gone down for tea and so forth.
And you set sail into the Mediterranean, surely?
Yes.
About what month would this be?
Well,
1916.
Yes. 1916. Oh, yes, I should think we arrived... by the way, we set off in the boat and we never stopped anymore. We didn't call up Malta this time, we bypassed Malta, straight on, up between Italy and Sicily, what is it, and into Marseille's harbour. That was a beautiful sight, I always remember it.
I think there was a submarine incident.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell me about that?
Well, just after we'd passed through between Italy, and Sicily, is it, that island, next to it, the toe of Italy. Our gunners suddenly let fly, you know, with a couple of naval gunners on. They let fly a shot, two shots anyway, and we got somebody shouted orders to giraffes and boats. So we made our way, dashed to them, and
was there any panic?
Not really, no. Just excitement, all shuffling past one another, get to your own boat, you know, because you're your own boat to get on. You've been detailed off to them, you know, before you started on the journey. And we fired these couple of shots, and then and our boat twisted a bit. Sort of thing away from them, I fancy, I don't know. But anyway, soon after that, an officer up above shouted, "It's quite all right, boys." You know. And the sailors said, like, they were telling us, "Never catch us." It's a fast boat, this. "They'll never catch us on that submarine. They never attempted to come after us, you see." So that was all. And we just saw, as we looked back, part of a conning tower we took it to be, you know, it's just about sinking again. But he's not coming after us because he's no use to sailors, said he weren't anywhere near fast enough. So we carried on, and then the next thing we saw was Marseilles.
Now that would be early June 1916.
Yes, it must have been.
You said off tape.
And what a sight, your lovely sight sailing into Marseilles. The water was absolutely blue, you know, the sea on the great city of Marseilles was built like on the hills, you know, on the slopes, like down to the bay. And there's all the white buildings in front of us, and a big fort here on this side. Looked like it, you know, it looked like a big fort to me. And I think it was. Anyway.
What did you think? Because now you knew you were going back to the Western Front. How did you feel about it?
Oh, not so good. No, not so good. We didn't like it at all. No.
What were people saying?
"We're off to France, wherever we'll get, I don't know. We'll get to that bloody place. Ypres, or Passchendaele." You know. "Oh, not," and this, that, and the other. Anyway, we could only guess. We get off the boat quickly. No delay. March straight across the town to the railway sidings and get in a train. No delay there in Marseille. And the chaps were telling us what a place it was, you know. A rough place, Marseilles. And especially for women and that, you know. And anyway, we hadn't time, so we kept going to these trucks. We got in these trucks. Like, oh, there's so many hommes, so many men, you know.
What were the trucks like?
Ordinary railway carriage trucks. All ordinary trucks, goods trucks that you see on our railways. They were the same. Four-wheeled goods trucks. You know, with a sliding door at the side. That's what they were.
Were they clean?
Well, yes, clean. You could say clean, but when we got in and threw our equipment all over the place, you know, and packed like we were, you couldn't move without stepping over equipment or between somebody's legs or something. Anyway, we had to settle there for some time. And off we set. And
what do you remember about the train journey?
Well, we used to pick up braziers, you know. We used to make braziers out of biscuit tins. Punch them with holes, you know.
What, with coal in them?
Eh?
The fire things?
Aye. And we used to hang them out on something, whatever we could, at the door, so that they'd fan in and blaze up, you know, to brew tea and things like that. Of course, we went through scores of French villages.
How did you manage for food?
Well, we had iron rations, that's all we had, you know, until we got to certain places. And when we got there, the villagers were giving us things, you know. They were bringing us cakes and bread. And because we stopped every so far for emergency, you know. Toilets and washing basins, big tubs with water in for a starved well, you know. Went through ponds, something, you know. I never noticed all the names. Scores of them we passed through. Beautiful, beautiful places, you know. Beautiful villages. Beautiful villages. At that time of year, too, they were beautiful.
How long were you on the train for?
Well, we got in when... It was daylight when we got in them. We spent that night on them anyway. And we spent another night on them. And I think we spent almost another night on them. Because we stopped for 4 or 5 hours at these places for washing up, you know, for having a wash and toilets, you know. We'd stop for 3 or 4 hours there. Then on again.
Where did you finish up?
We finished up eventually. It's a little village, I don't know, I forget the name, it's close by Mailey Mallet. You know, that was our place where we lived, in a barn there, Mailey Mallet.
That was your rest camp, or...?
Yes, although what we'd done really, I remember quite well, we got off the train, finished our train duty, and still we had miles and miles to march, you know. We didn't ride up to the place. And we spent a night in a barn, marching towards this place, you know. And I know, because we were at a farmer's house, and I had my breakfast with the farmer and his wife and sons. They invited me to have my breakfast there with them. And we'd been in the barn, you know, in the straw barn, all night. That was before we got to Mailey Mallet. Then we marched on, of course, and we got to... It was either Mailey Mallet or Ocean Villas, I forget which. Anyway, we had quite a lot to do with Mailey Mallet. And we settled down there and there to rest, to tidy up and one thing and another. Then we started to have a few parades, you know, marching parades and one thing and another, and attacking. And
did you know, were you rehearsing specifically for the attack on the Somme?
We didn't know, you know.
Was there anything special about the practice attacks you made, or were they...
No, because it was like any other attack.
There wasn't a mock battlefield or tapes?
No. Yes, we had tapes. It was just like another attack. We had the tapes down, their trenches and so forth, you know. And we attacked according to these tapes. But anyhow...
Were you issued with steel helmets before? Because you wouldn't have had them with you.
No. We were issued.
What did you think of them when you first got them? The steel helmets?
Oh, didn't I well like them. Oh, no, wouldn't have liked them.
Why not?
Well, they're damned heavy things to put on your head, they thought, for a start. Uncomfortable, and... I mean, they only just fit on your head, they were round, you know, just fit on your head, and... Fellas didn't... They were spoiling the hair and all sorts of things, you see.
What do you mean, spoiling the hair?
Well, they thought it would very soon rub them bald, one of them things. I thought the same. Of course, I wore it, I had to do. But anyway, they issued us with them.
Did they look strange to you? Or?
No, not really.
You got used to
them? We got quite used to them in a short time. And then one day, out of the ordinary, the old battalion formed into a three-sided square outside the village, you know, and up came the general. And you know, I can't tell you what general it was. General in charge, anyway. I don't know damn not as who he was. None of us did, I don't think. And he was on horseback with one or two lagging on behind him, you know. And he started to make a speech. He was going to make this attack. And he knew we would do our duty, as we always had done before. He knew our record for the Dardanelles and all that sort of thing, you know. And he knew he could trust us and all that. Of course, you can imagine what all the lads were saying round about. They were cursing and...
Were they doing that during the actual speech?
Oh, yes, yes. Cheer up, you bastard. You know, and things like that. Our officer was turning around, cheer up, you mouth, you know. But it didn't make no difference. They all kept swearing and kissing. Oh, she's bloody awesome, kicking to death. You know, things, oh, yes.